Welcome to the Pete Primo Show. It is episode 169, and we are here with Clint Wallen, and we're going to be talking about taking the simple path. But first, let's pay the bills, guys. So, if you haven't bought my book, Sell a Million, 101 Tips for Furniture and Mattress Store Owners, what are you waiting for? Grab my book. It's on Amazon. Call me at 419-560-3169. I'll help you implement any idea in this book that's near and dear to your heart and you don't know exactly how to do it. So that's that. I'd like to thank my friends at the Mattress Industry Network Group for sponsoring the show. Steve and Greg, thank you very much for your support of our show. And if you don't belong to the Mattress Industry Network Group, guys, hit that scan code right there and join the group. Over, oh my Lord, probably over 2,300 or more strong. And here's the most important part. If you want to build, market, sell, and succeed in the Mattress Industry Network Group, come here, be here. If you are in the mattress industry, we want you in this group. It's a group run by retailers for the benefit of the entire industry. Everybody's in here. Store owners, sales pros that work the retail floor, sales reps, VPs of sales, and owners of manufacturing companies. They're all in here. Join the group right now. And without a further ado, we have a special sponsor today, Bedden Industries of America. My dear friend, Enzo Mastriani, is hosting a open house in Michigan. And it is Wednesday, May 8th, 8 o'clock through 6 p.m. He does something I don't do. I don't post hours. I'm strictly by appointment, but he's different. Thursday, May 9th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. For those of you who don't know Enzo, you are missing out on a special treat. He's owned his own mattress factory before. He is one of the best reps in the entire industry. This is a guy that can help you build your business. Over 40 new models, including Dunlop, Talalay Latex, split head mattresses, best in class tufted models, New Your Comfort series, coil on coil constructions, cool and cover hybrids, roll pack models, and new aggressively priced promotional mattresses. So it's all there for you. Call me if you are in Ohio and you want to go. I will be there all day Thursday and probably Thursday morning, but I'll definitely be there all day Wednesday. Enzo will be there the entire time. If you are in Michigan or Indiana or anywhere in the area, come to our open house. It's going to be absolutely electric. If you have any questions about that, call me or call Enzo. Without a further ado, let's get to our guest who's been waiting patiently. Clint, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And, you know, I was just telling you, you know, while we were in the green room that, like, dude, I barely know you. So I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. You've been in the industry over 16 years and I've watched some of your content and I see some of the things that you post and I'm really intrigued because you're a sales guy, but you're a marketer too. And you really have some important things to say about marketing. And right now with the way our industry is, Clint, you know, we really need to get that door to swing because that is one of the biggest problems that we have right now. It is slow. It is slow across the board. Even for the guys that are doing business are still getting slower door turns than they would like. So those of you who don't know Clint, he owns his own company, Mattress Fuel, who helps retailers. And he's also just recently the VP of business development at South Bay. So congratulations, Clint.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you.
I don't know how you get it all done, brother.
Well, yeah, we were talking about Steve a minute ago. I am shy of him. I've got four kids of my own that are in the house, two that are adopted that are out of the house. And so it makes a very busy schedule, but you know, we make it work. My wife is a special lady. So many people say that she's the rock star of the group for sure. That's what keeps us together.
Yeah, I can testify to that. Same thing here. If it wasn't for Jenny, I wouldn't try to do half of what I do, literally. So we just started talking about the fact that the door swings are really lower than most retailers would like. For some of them, they're desperately slow, and other guys are and gals are doing a little bit better than that. But, you know, you've been at this for a while. What is this? Does this remind you of anything that, like, we've been through before in your last 16 years, or is it kind of its own thing? What we're in today.
To me, it feels a little different, Pete, just because of the market dynamics with inflation. I mean, if you go recently, I was at the mall and I was like, you know, we feel the pressure in our industry all the time of traffic counts, and it's definitely slower than it was the last couple of years. And you get in your bubble and you think that people aren't in the market buying. However, you know, like I said, I was at the mall about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, and it was like there was ants on sugar. There was so many people at the mall. And so that really got me thinking that there is still discretionary income in the market. Yes, is it tighter? Yes, is inflation a factor on many people in America? Yes, completely so. You can't deny that fact, right? But people are still choosing to spend money. And so it's all about positioning your value in the marketplace in an effective way. And what I see a lot of people doing is it can't be as simple as just running promotions, right? I think years past with direct style marketing, lead costs were super low. It worked, but you're not just competing with other mattress companies or retailers in your area. I mean, you're competing with all businesses that are going into that discretionary income. So you have to tweak it. You have to model it in a different way and all see those store counts increase.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. The closest thing I can think of is 2008, but this is different. It's definitely different. I think you put your finger directly on it. There's inflation, dependent on if you watch the news and how much news you watch and which news you watch, you could be full of fear as well. I'm not. I stopped doing that years and years ago because here's the reality. I block and tackle for a living. That's what I do. I help my dealers execute. That's what I do. That's what I focus on. I can't control who's doing what to who on what day and what's the truth and what's a lie. I have no interest. I just want to help my customers win in a difficult economy. I loved what you said. And it's really, hey, Tim McDonald, Tim says, morning, fellas. It's that time again. Let's roll. We are rolling, brother. And I want to just say this. I worked a private, Dan Jordan, dude, I love you. Thank you for coming on my show and saying hi. Looking strong, guys. Sell a million. You sell a million, Dan. We got to hook up. And Joseph Clay is saying, looking forward to the show today. And we are looking forward to your comments and questions, Joe. Thank you for being here. So on Friday, Clint, I was at a top 100 private letter event. That is a combination of medias, and they're big numbers that we needed to meet. And I got, for the first time in years, and not Clint, I mean years. Like when I played football in college, I would get the butterflies like before every game. I got the butterflies because I was nervous that this event was going to flop. And then it would confirm how bad of a year that we are really having. So this is about 50 minutes out, and you know, I do what I do when I get nervous. I pray. And so when I walked in, everything was cool. But there weren't a lot of cars in the parking lot when I got there. But within a few minutes, people started coming in. And before you know it, we were slammed. And we were slammed to like 7:30 at night. And
nice.
I was so happy, dude. I was so happy because it showed me that there was still a lot of business. And listen, I would love to tell you guys the numbers. I can't tell you the numbers. If I get the permission of this retailer to tell you the numbers, I will, but I haven't done that. So I'm not sharing the numbers, but I'm going to tell you this. When I went back on Saturday, I kind of got the same feeling again. I don't know why, but I just did. And those numbers were 30% bigger on Saturday. So yeah. It was huge. It was incredible. The amount of business and exactly what you said, to quote you, there is still a lot of discretionary income out there in the marketplace. Is there as much as we'd like? And is it coming in easily? No, you've got to work. You've got to work. You got to be sharper. And so Clint, let's just go get into it a little bit. So,
okay.
You know, from putting your marketing hat on, you know, media message. And what happens in our industry typically is with this media thing, we become infatuated with the media before we really clearly identify the market, before we clearly identify the message. What I've been preaching, and coach me up if I'm wrong, because I would love to get your insights. We get this media. Now I need a message. Now who am I talking to? And I think we get it backwards. So coach me up on that, putting your marketing hat on. Which one do we need to understand first? And then how do we get all three legs of the marketing stool working together and solid to give us a good foundation?
Yeah, good question. So you mentioned the news a few seconds ago, a few minutes ago. And so I want to go back to that. You know, I saw an interesting stat the other day, and it showed that since the Depression, it didn't matter really if a Democrat was in office or a Republican was in office. The trajectory of the stock market has continued to go up. Yes, there's some lulls in there, you know, right? It's a big boost. But over time, it's statistically, it's going to increase. And so that made me really think about, you know, what or the success of your business or the failure of your business is more about what you control between the ears, right? It's a mindset issue. And so many times we can let the news affect how we're going to operate our business. We're going to let the traffic counts affect how we're going to market our business. When in truly the first foundational piece, my belief anyway, of having a successful marketing system that's continuously driving traffic is you have to have that mindset. And so now to follow up with what you mentioned, Pete, or kind of what I believe the first thing you should have, mindset. And the second is you have to have your offer down. And when I see so many times that retailers and even manufacturers in our industry, right? I've got experience on both ends that we fail to put the offer and position the offer in a way that differentiates and highlights our strengths. And so many times we just want to run that. I'll go back to this. Hey, it's 50% off or $299 pillow top mattress or $399 sofa. And yes, you need to have those. You need to have those as part of your overall marketing strategy. But the key thing, marketing is to the definition of marketing is to be made known. And there's no, you can't expect to have great results if you're going to give a mediocre offer, right? And so that's one of the ways that I like to challenge the people that I get blessed to work with. It, you know, your customers, your clients don't know how you're different. They don't know how you're unique. And if you don't communicate that to them in a way that they understand it and relates that back to their solution or the results they're seeking, then you're completely wasting your marketing efforts and you're just to get mediocre results. And so that's really where I like to start with people when I'm trying to help them up, is really understand the purpose of marketing is to highlight who you are, how you're different, and how you can really help solve their issue in a unique way, not just like every other competitor down the street.
Yeah, I love Dan Kennedy's definition that your offer should be so compelling that they choose you over every other competitor. And what nobody wants to talk about, doing nothing, because people do come in and out of the market, and doing nothing is unfortunately checkbox too many times. And a lot of times that we forget that that's an option for them. If we give them a crappy enough experience, enough different stores give them a crappy enough experience, they will do nothing, because the roof will leak, the kids need braces, the car breaks down, life happens, and then your mattress purchase just got put on the back burner again.
Yeah.
So I love what you said. Well, I love that you didn't even answer my question and you went with mindset, because you're 100% right. It all starts with our mindset. And so when we are positioning this offer that differentiates, how much time do you spend, Clint, in really analyzing who this offer is targeting? Who is the target market? What do they look like? Where do they go? What moves them? What are their fears? What are their loves? What do they hate? How much time do you spend in that area?
So, yes. So I'll be completely transparent with you, Pete. I spend the majority of my time when I'm working with retailers and focusing on their strengths and differentiators, because not that the target market's not important. I'm not saying that at all, but my approach is I really teach broad targeting. So that for the fact, let the digital components, the algorithms, let them do the work. Let them go find your key prospects in the market. But I really spend a lot of time. I mean, after we kind of say, okay, hey, I want to do some stuff. We really spend first meeting, we deep dive. I mean, we go from, okay, what are you doing now? How are your messaging? What do your ads look like currently? And then we go down to, okay, what's your sales process look like, right? How are you greeting your customers? Am I going to see the same thing if I walk in your third store or your 45th store, right? We really dive into that. How does your follow-up process look like? And we really get the weeds so that we can pull out those key differentiators that will really stick out and resonate with your prospects. And so I'm not trying to dodge a question, but I really feel like the retailers that I work with, they know their market. They just don't know how to communicate the offer in a way that's going to resonate. Does that make sense, Pete?
Yep. It makes sense. So let's do this. This sales process and follow-up process really links back to a question that was in the group, and I want to get your take on it, Clint. And the question was, what is the closing percentage, the average closing percentage in a sleep shop? I'd like to get your take on.
Do you want the norm, or do you want what a good sleep shop should have?
I want both. Start off with what the average is and what we should realistically aspire to.
Okay. Yeah, good question. It's my belief, my experience, that the average is around that 60% mark. What you should aspire to is 80, 85. And I'll say the reason I want to justify that is because the buying experience is completely different than it was years back, right? You used to spend your Saturdays shopping around. Now we've got kids' ball games. We've got errands to run, right? And we have the power and the ease of internet, right? So a lot of people are doing their shopping online. And so we know that they're not going to as many stores as they used to. And so if people are coming into your store, like you need to think, what am I doing or not doing causing that person to walk out? Because we know that they want to buy a mattress or sofa or what, right? If you're furniture on that side or case goods, whatever the case may be, but you know, they're coming in because they're ready to buy. They've already done their research ahead of time. And so you have to look at it as you have to really screw up. And again, I'm generalizing here, Pete, so please understand that, but you have to really think back, okay, what is wrong with my sales process? What is broken? Am I in such a way that I'm not building that trust effectively at the very get-go and providing that solution that makes sense for that consumer?
That's interesting. And it points out a very fundamental fact. My numbers are much lower than yours, but for the purposes of this discussion, it doesn't really matter. Why the follow-up process is so important: if you close at 60%, there's 40% left. If you close at 85%, there's still 15% left, right? So that follow-up process is really important. And you're one of the few guys actually talking about it. You and Janakovo talk about that a lot. And that's, what do we do? And you can't follow up if you don't have any information, right?
Correct. Yeah. This is one of the, to me, simplest ways that retailers and manufacturers both can really grow their business. I think so many times people want to put a dollar in, get $2 out immediately, right? And yes, that's nice. We want to run campaigns that work that way. But reality, if you want long-term sustainable leads traffic into your business, the follow-up is key. And the great thing about it is, does it take some effort? Yes. But so many things now can be automated that you can just on a system and let the system work for you. And, I see so many retailers that miss out and manufacturers on just simple email campaigns that follow up with prospects. So many times you see this promotional, you get an email when there's a promotion, right? Memorial Day promotion, July 4th promotion, but they miss that time in between. So they're not building that trust and building upon that relationship that they had in the store, right? They didn't convert. That still doesn't mean that relationship has to go back to zero. And by kind of coming into the market per se for them, you're not building any of that trust that can build that relationship. And so email is such a simple way to do that. And then we could talk about some other ways, to retarget, whether people come in at the very beginning of your funnel or through your store. But the key thing is you want to be, we're very big in our industry about talking about relationships. And so that relationship needs to stay if that customer doesn't, or excuse me, that prospect doesn't convert. You still need to keep that relationship going because you don't know if that prospect turns into a customer next week, next month, next year, or they refer other people to you. I mean, it's the systems of follow-up that have to be in place that during these tough times like they are now, when traffic is not easy to come by, lead costs get more expensive, that you need to have that system in place to continually drive traffic.
So do you prefer email campaigns to text campaigns, or do you think you really need to reach out in multiple ways and touch the customer in different ways in a follow-up campaign?
I'm a big believer. I read this in a book, I don't know, a couple years back called Oversubscribed. I don't remember who the author is, but he talked about you need to have a minimum of 7 touch points before a prospect becomes a customer. And I'm a big believer in text campaigns. But I do believe that text is a little bit more of a intrusive nature. I think we talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the Friday Zoom. And so I like text for promotion, but I do like email for more of the consistent value add follow-up Now, if you're trying to get somebody back in that said, hey, I'll be a BBAC, then yeah, text will work. But if you're really trying to build that long-term sustainable approach, email is not dead. Now, it's dead if you don't give them value. If you're just hitting them with promotions all the time, then yeah, email is not going to work. They're going to hit that unsubscribe button. But if you're talking to their issues, their pain points, the things that are going to resonate with them about wanting to sleep better, wanting to be a healthier person, more energy, right? It doesn't matter who you are. You want to be a better person for the most part. So if you're speaking to that, you're going to build those relationships and you're going to be the only option for them when they do get ready. And that's the key, especially with all the competition out there. You've got to find ways to build that relationship so that you are always top of mind.
When you do your deep dive, you do your strategy call, what happens next?
Okay. Yeah. So what we do after we go that deep dive is I find three pillars. I'm a big believer in pillars, Pete. So the pillars are what the foundational pieces that you can utilize from now until you stop your business, right? These are the three things that you can establish in your marketing that you can always highlight. It doesn't matter if you're just running a lead ad, right? Memorial Day, you want to make sure these three pillars are in your ad. If you're just going to do some brand campaigns, these three pillars are in your ads. If you're following up with an email, make sure to highlight one of these in your ads. And so we look at and identify the three pillars, and then I help those retailers create their brand awareness campaigns or their pillar ads, and then their irresistible offer. And then I show them how to do some retargeting, and we write those scripts together as well. That's really that second piece that we follow up on.
And does that happen within a few weeks or?
Yeah. So I'll tell you the biggest hang up for a lot of retailers that I work with is in order to do the framework the right way, you have to do video. And so once we go that deep dive, normally within a 3-4 day period, I can churn out that copy. But it's really the retailer's hesitation of putting their face or getting somebody that they can trust on video in order to then run the ads themselves. So that's really where the hang up is and where the time constraint becomes.
Yeah. So are you finding a lot of resistance? Like that, you know, I've got a face for radio kind of comments and. Yeah, there's a lot of hang-ups with people's voices, with their videos. I mean, I was pretty hung up on all of it until I got to be about 60, and then I just didn't give a crap anymore. And but
I think so many people let thought or their made-up thoughts of what other people will think about them keep them from sharing their message, whether that be video, whether that be in a mall, whatever the case may be. I think so many times people let that fear of what other people will think of them hold them. And you know, well as I do, like it, your first video versus your thousandth video, there's going to be a huge difference, but you got to, excuse my language, this bad, but you got to suck in order to become good at it, right? It just doesn't happen like you're just not naturally going to be great on camera. Even people that I know that are naturally good, there's still a night and day difference between where they were at the very beginning to where they are. It's night and day. So you got to start. That's the key. Just start.
Yeah. And listen, you know, we talk about differentiation. Nothing will differentiate you better than you. You are the one person that can't be duplicated. So you, with your warts, with your pimples, with your double chin, whatever it is that you don't like about yourself, you're perfect for your store. And here's the deal. Over time, yes, you will get better. And no, you're never going to be a professional actor, nor would you want to be if you could be, because what people will buy is you. Your authenticity. And if you want some a little help and you want to cheat a little bit. You got a cute little baby in your life, whether you're the mom or you're the grandparent, put babies in there, puppies, kitty cats, any. You don't have to be in there solo. You look at Scott Vaughn's body of work, over the last 19 years. Did he get better? Yeah, he got insanely better, but he is perfect. And we watched his children grow up in those commercials. We know about his dogs. And so don't be afraid to be yourself. It's how you differentiate yourself.
Yeah.
Chris, you are the most amazing producer the world has ever seen. There's Scott.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Two of my favorite people, just being themselves, being genuine, sharing their hearts, right? Sharing your heart with another human being. One of the things, and I say it every week, I get tired of saying it, but hey, these things are the worst things that ever happened to us as a society. We think we're plugged in. We're not plugged in. We're dying of loneliness. We, instead of saying hi to the lady next door to us, we got our nose in this darn thing. And it is absolutely, people need connection. And your video from your heart will connect with more customers than anything you can ever do. Coach me up if I'm wrong.
No, I just want to add that, you know, a lot of times people think, well, I've got to go hire a video production team. And yes, there's going to be a time for that. We'll go back to the differentiation thing. Your big box competitors, right? They serve the market, but that's what they're doing. And so your prospects have already seen that. But when you take, like you mentioned, right? You take this thing out and you get in front of the camera, you shoot it in the store. You can go live on your Facebook page, or you can run some big ads. You are showing your prospects how you're different, right? You're showing them value because, hey, the value is going to be in the product, not in these huge expensive ads that I just had to pay for. And so you are showing value either consciously or subconsciously to your prospects in such a way that it will resonate with them. But important part. You're not supposed to resonate with everybody. And I think that's one of the key things about marketing is you're supposed to attract certain people and you're supposed to push other people away. And I understand like when we're in a market, like we want everybody, but you simply can't do that in a long-term sustainable way. Because if you do, then you're just going to continue to kick the can down the road. But if you want to take the business to the next level, attract some, push the majority away.
All you need is a few good customers and you're golden. Push away all those customer reselects, push away those people that are just gonna, you know, it's always cracked me up. And it was true in 1982 and it's true in 2024, probably more true today than it was when I first started. I was always told, your worst customer will be your worst customer from the get-go. Before they even buy something, they will be your worst customer. They will beat you up on price. They will want something special. They will be trying to get the better end of this thing from the get-go, and they never stop until you finally surrender, pick their stuff up, and give them a refund because you just don't want any more. You literally tap out. And if we can avoid those people, I think that would be a great thing for all of us to do. A lot of people, Clint, have a problem with this idea of repelling, and you know they shouldn't be afraid of it. You should repel some customers. You should repel customers that wouldn't be a good fit for your store. If you are a super high-end store, you don't want low-end customers walking into your store. It's a waste of everybody's time. And what it does is it really wears on your salespeople and your sales pros not getting the right customer. And the opposite is true. If you're a promotional store and you're coming across all hoity-toity and you're pulling in a higher-end clientele, who, number one, is not comfortable in your store. And number two, you don't even have what they want. I mean, and I'm exaggerating, but it's super important to understand who our customer is, who we're merchandising to, who we're selling to, how we're selling to them. And when the customer comes across one of our ads and then they walk into our store, do those things flow seamlessly? Are they consistent, or are we throwing a curveball at the retail customer? What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think so many times, like you run the $199, $299 Queen pillow top, right? And when people see it, they're like, that's not what I thought it was going to be. And I think so many times, you know, that consistency message is so vital to really keep building that trust throughout the entire buyer's journey. And, you know, we were talking about conversion rates earlier and being efficient. You know, I believe that if you do your marketing right, your conversion rates are naturally going to increase because you are attracting those right people. And you're going to find that because those conversion rates go up, you're going to be making more money. So then you can go and attract more of the people that you're going after to begin with. And I think so many times retailers are fearful that if I pale certain people, my lead costs are going to go up dramatically. But actually, while the lead costs might go up, the cost to acquire the customer goes way down. Right? It really, from a marketing standpoint, one metric that so many people don't look at is cost to acquire a customer. They might look at their lead cost. They might look at their traffic counts, but they're not really evaluating that cost to acquire a customer.
Yeah.
And so you really, really want to focus on those differentiators to really get the key prospects in and then push those ones away.
Stu.
What is Stu saying?
What did Stu, but I want to win the lotto, Pete. I do too, brother. But you want to hear something, Stu? If I won the lottery, I'd still be doing what I'm doing. I mean, I absolutely love this industry. I've always loved it. I have been so lucky because I've never worked a day in my life for the last 43 years. It's been just nothing but joy. Stu says, you're right. I'd still buy it wholesale. Stu, you're too funny. All right. Stu continues. When I used to sell that 4-inch foam bait and switch, it almost stunned me. I didn't get punched once. Yeah. Sometimes it feels like they are going to punch you when you approach it that way. I would still be here early tomorrow. Stu, that is like the comment of the year on the Pete Primo show. You'd count your money and then you'd lock the door, right, brother? Clint, when you're working with these customers and you're getting to work with, you know, higher end retailers, middle of the road retailers, and then promotional retailers, do you see any consistent mistakes that you would like to coach people up on in just broad strokes?
Okay. I'm going to say this more for the medium to higher end retailer. Sure. This is one that every time I see it, Pete, it really just hurts my heart. I wish they would just step back and think what they're doing. Is when they run a lead campaign, they're going after the people that they're trying to get them to buy on that promotion or that weekend or whatever the case may be, right? They're people that are actively in the market ready to buy. And when they set up their lead campaign to go and they push that traffic to a website, and it hurts my heart so bad. Because why would you take somebody who is eager, ready to spend money and push them to a website where most websites aren't set up to convert that prospect into a customer? They're not set up to convert that lead into a phone call or an appointment or whatever the case may be. And so they push them to a website where they get lost. And then if they find something, well, they're on the web now. They're going to go see, well, who else might have that? And so you had this engaged lead. You paid for the lead and then you pushed them away. And I feel like there's a time to push traffic to a website, but not when you're spending the most expensive part of your overall marketing strategy is going to be on your leads, right? Those active lead campaigns. And so it just really hurts my heart when I see people pushing to a website. So
a website that doesn't convert, right?
Correct. I mean, if you're an e-com player, that's one thing, but our customers are not, who you and I serve, they're not e-com. They might get a little on the side, but if you're trying to get people into your store, you want traffic, don't push them to a website. And so most people are scrolling anyway. They don't want to leave the site. So you need to have something set up where they can send out a simple form, click a message. They have the call feature now. So many options you can do, but please just don't push to a website.
Clint, let me ask you a question. I really don't know the answer to this because you're head and shoulders above me on this one. If you're, you know, we hear a lot about these chats. Is that a good tool?
On the website?
Yeah, they're on the website and we engage them with chat. Is that a good way to do it or not good?
So yes, it is, Pete, but my thing is that you've got to remember people's attention span are super, super low, right? There's some crazy stat now that a goldfish has a longer attention span than humans do now. So you've got to be able to have it where they can take the next step easily and efficiently. Now, to my knowledge, when people go to, or the way most ads are set up now, they push people to a website. It would probably be a product page. And yes, the little icon at the bottom will pop up. But for the most part, those are people that are doing in the process of doing their research. And those are very important to be able to answer those questions within that research phase. But when you're running a lead campaign is somebody who is ready to buy. And so that website chat is not going to be effective in converting that prospect to a customer. Does that make sense? Like there's a time for it. It's in the research phase. It's not in the, hey, I'm ready to go find my next sleep set today or tomorrow or this weekend.
That's very good. Messaging. How often do you listen during this discovery call and you find out that their messaging is just wrong? And like immediately you're thinking, man, if I could just fix this one thing, I could help this person make a lot more money. How often does that happen?
So I think a lot of times, or the majority of retailers I've worked with, Pete, it's they think that people are going to get tired of their message. And they forget that they're inundated with so many different advertisements, campaigns, offers, people that, again, we always think about, we think the focus is on us, but we forget that our prospects are the same way. They're really only thinking about themselves. And so a big mistake that I see people make in their advertising is they try something once, say it didn't work. But no, if that's why we call them pillars, because you want to continually use them, saying you're not going to say the same thing every time, but you can form it in a different way and make sure that you're speaking to different people in a different ways that can resonate with the way people think. And so you always want to make sure that you're preaching that same consistent message, those three pillars in unique ways to resonate with your prospects. But you're not going to say the same thing and it get tired out. You'll see your frequency rates on the back end of your metrics to know if your message is overdone too much in the marketplace. But
What is your, you know, when I worked for Bob Sherman, which was, you know, 30 years ago, I'm sure it's changed. So it's probably not a good number anymore, but he taught us pretty much the same exact message regarding just basic advertising, not necessarily digital advertising, that there's only 1% of the population in the market at any given point in time. And so 99%, they are not in the market. And so they don't even see your ad. And when they are in the market, it's the principle of reflection, right? They will see the ad at that point. I've been doing all the talking and peppering you with questions. So I'm going to ask you one question that might take us to the end of the show. It may not, but here's my question. Is there a question that I should have asked you that I didn't, or that you'd like me to ask you so that you could answer it for our audience?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really get into a kind of where I feel like I want you to ask me this question.
Okay.
What is the biggest hang up between manufacturers and retailers today?
It's a great question. Hey, Clint, what's the biggest hang up between manufacturers and retailers today?
Thank you, Pete, for asking me that question.
You're welcome. I'm a psychic.
You know, Pete, I know, you know, some of the companies that you work with, and I know a lot of people hold them in high regard. And so, but in my experience, both on the manufacturing side and on the retail side, there is a major, major disconnect between what manufacturers offer and what retailers want. And I'll share with you my story where I knew I was 100% right on this. I was on the retail side running sales for 400 store plus chain. And I had an EVP to my left. I had a VP on my right, and the sales rep, the VP was in the middle and the sales rep on the right. And the whole entire meeting, the only question that they asked us, the only one, was that question that always gets asked, that really a lot of times people don't care about. And then the rest of the meeting, they spent the whole time talking about their new website and order portal that had no immediate impact to either helping us get more traffic, make that traffic more profitable, or having them come back more often. And so the reason I went with and was glad to come on board with South Bay is because they do get that, right? I mean, I'm sure with your experience, you and I could probably geek out all day on products, right? And products are definitely important. I mean, but that's the minimal barrier to entry. You have to have a great product.
Right.
But you have to find ways that is going to help the retailer make more money, make it faster, make it easier, lower their costs, or lower the risk. Right. And so if you're not presenting yourself in that way, you're really not helping your partners out in the market. Yeah, it's a very transactional relationship. But if you want to really help that retailer, you want to build a long-term partnership, that's what you have to do. And so that's why I really like South Bay. A lot of people don't know of them. Many friends reach out to me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, guys, you don't understand. Like, they have a handful of customers that do a lot of business. And so they're wanting to scale that, help other retailers out. And so they do certain things that are allow retailers, like I said, those five things to help them out. One thing I do want to highlight that I think is a total game changer is we have a product called the Infinity Lounger. So Pete, I know you sell adjustable bases. Consider why people really like the adjustable base, right? They like the adjustable base because yes, it makes the sleep more comfortable, but really they like it because they get to sit up in bed. They can watch TV. They can read a book. So what we've done with the Amity Lounger is we've taken the bedroom to the living room. We have a patented design that puts the adjustable base with a mattress, Stinnex mattress, as part of a system where you can have a lounger, a recliner, console, or any other makeup. It's very versatile. It could be great for theater seating. It could be great for a show in the house. It's a really, really neat, innovative product. So I would be amiss if I didn't mention that to your audience. That is something that's really, really cool. It's coming down the pipe, but.
That's something that would just get me in trouble because I'd end up falling asleep in the living room and not make it back to the bed. And then I'd hear about it. So,
well, we've been talking about marketing all day. Can you imagine having a advertisement where the husband is happy to get kicked out and have to go to the couch and sleep on the couch?
That would be hilarious. Where you have them do like a different stupid thing every commercial. Like, and then you get people to send in their ideas. Hey, how do we get stupid husband kicked out of his bedroom this time? Give us a new idea. Yeah. We're running out of ideas. Yeah. Yeah. No, that could actually be a lot of fun. So, you know, it's very interesting because your question is a question that is on my website. Primo Furniture Sales exists because of the gap between what manufacturers offer and what retailers need. And they need direction. They need expertise. They need us to share ideas on how they can be better in all aspects of their business, not just product. Product's very important, but how it's positioned and the merchandising and the advertising. If nobody comes into your store, you're out of business. And without the advertising connecting well to the merchandise and connecting to the display, and then the salespeople being well-trained, it's all for nothing, right? Because we can get a customer coming in. We can have beautiful merchandise. It could be merchandised beautifully if our salespeople, you know, are not asking the right questions. They're not engaging properly. It's all for nothing. And trying to fit those things in seamlessly is what the best of the best in retail do. But go ahead. I
just wanted to, you know, we were talking before the show started about your podcast and the Zoom on Friday winning the week. And that's, you've taken and you identified that gap and you're offering something to retailers and very graciously other manufacturers as well, if they want to be a part of it. And so we think a lot of times we think that we have to do these huge events or these huge things. And really it's being, we've talked about this a lot, being who you are, but being consistent with that. And if you can provide something of value, I mean, there's consistently the same retailers on Friday that I get to be a part of because they want to be a part of something. They want to learn. They want to see what they're doing is working or it's not, get feedback in a very welcoming, easy way. Right. And that's just a huge value that you give the market. So kudos to you. And I just wanted to highlight that is this, you don't have to do extraordinary things. Extraordinary becomes extraordinary when you're consistent with the small things.
Mm. I think that might be the quote of the show right there. Consistency trumps everything else. I'll never forget a young Pete Primo getting coached up by Bob Sherman. And he said, Pete, you don't have to do this all in one day. Just show up every day, be consistent, and you're going to be fine. You don't have to work on Saturdays and Sundays the way you are. If you show up Monday through Friday, consistently, and once in a while on a Saturday, because it's necessary, you're going to win. And that was 30 years ago. And it's just as true today as it was then, being consistent. Tim McDonald, I love you. Yo, Clint, let's go with that. 100%. Clint, this has been unbelievably fast. Killer show today, guys. Anyone who doesn't know Dan Jordan, just go in and Google The Sales Bible by Dan Jordan. Grab that book, and you'll thank me that you grabbed that book. Clint, it's time to say goodbye. Somebody has watched this show and somebody says, I want to get a hold of Clint. I like this guy. I want to learn more. What's the next step for people?
Easiest way, guys, is just go to my LinkedIn profile and send me a private message. I'm more than happy to bounce ideas, hear your thoughts, hear your questions, and see how I can help you out based on the experience I have on the manufacturing side or retail. Happy to help. Always, you know, you mentioned the good thing earlier. For me, it's all about pleasing God and serving people. And so if I can do that and help you out, that blesses me more than it will probably bless you. So I'm very, very happy to help you out.
Amen. Everybody that was here and made comments, thank you so much. And if you're joining us after the show's aired, we're glad you're here as well. Go forth and sell a million. Thank you, Clint. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you, Pete. It was an absolute pleasure.
Take care.